Father in Heaven, we are deeply thankful that we have times like this when we can gather together as your children, in your very presence, a time where we can come together to unite our hearts, to worship you, to express our appreciation of you, to draw near to you. And we ask, Father, that you will help us, that we may grow in our understanding, our knowledge of who you are, and what you mean to our lives. That we may in a deeper measure grow in appreciation of your grace, your love, your goodness. That you also teach us what it means to love you, to live for you, not only by our lips, but by our lives. Father, we ask that you help us as we continue to ponder about what happened to King Solomon, how he went so far astray from you, in spite of the favorable framework within which he could have worked out his life. We ask, Father, that you will help us to learn from his failures, to take heed from what went wrong in his life. Father, we ask that you will help us, that we may be deeply impressed with important issues of life and the far-reaching implications to be able to be careless to the way we live our lives. And so, Father, we ask that as we spend this time together, as we ponder the word of the scriptures, as we seek your praise, we ask, Father, that you will protect us and keep us, that you will speak to us, that it may also be a time when our minds can be renewed, our spirit strengthened, and our hearts purified. A time when we again renew our love for you, our desire to live fully for you. That we may know what it means to consecrate our lives unto you. We pray, Father, that you will continue to mold us, to speak to us by your Spirit. That during this whole time that we have together, that you will protect us and keep us from the powers of darkness. That you'll cover us with the blood of the Lord Jesus. That you'll be pleased to be in our midst. You'll not allow the powers of darkness in any way to harass us, to disturb us, to hinder us from understanding, from hearkening to what you say to us. That our hearts may be open to you. That we may take heed to whatever the Spirit desires to speak to us. So, Father, we look to you. We commit this time to your loving hands with thanksgiving in Jesus' name. Amen. We continue with our consideration of the subject of appearance and reality, the 48th message on the second major category of situations, the 24th message, and we are considering the subtopic, the framework within which we work out our lives, the 20th message, and consideration of the scriptural example of King Solomon, the man who went astray, the 4th message, and we are considering important truths and lessons that we can learn from Solomon's failure. And today we are concentrating on the issue of marriage and related issues. We have looked at the scriptures to consider to see how King Solomon fared very badly and how he went very far astray from the Lord, from the truth, even though he had a rather favorable framework within which to work out his life, in contrast to man Daniel, the man of the gospel in heart, who fared very well, even though he had a rather unfavorable and difficult framework within which to work out his life. And as we considered the life of King Solomon, we saw that the major area of his faltering was in the area of women. Look at it from a broader perspective, we can say the area of relationship with the opposite sex, falterings in this area, in disobedience to God, where he followed his personal desires and inclinations, and also the issue of marriage contrary to the will of God. Just remind ourselves as we look at 1 Kings chapter 11, what we have considered, how King Solomon, from verse 1, how he loved many foreign women along with the daughter of Pharaoh, how he faltered in this area even quite early stage of his life. Verse 2, how he married all these various foreign women from the nations concerning which the Lord has said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them. Disobedience to a direct commandment of the Lord, the will of the Lord expressed, and how they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. There were reasons behind God's commandment, but Solomon held fast to these in love. His disobedience was not just a momentary thing, but he persisted in this wrong path, and as a result, his wives and concubines turned his heart away from the Lord and after other false gods, and as a result, he did many terrible things in the way of the direction of idolatry, what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and how God was angry with him and pronounced judgment on him. We have considered how Solomon had generally a rather clearer framework, but we also considered how there were areas where it was difficult for him, especially in his position as king, and also the pressures upon him because he was in a favorable position to contribute significantly to the Lord's work as king over God's people. And in this area also, it's helpful to take note that he also faced more temptations in this area of women and indulgence of desires of the flesh because of his position as king. But this is actually not just a problem area for King Solomon. If we reflect upon the issues of life, we will realize that this is actually one of the major problem areas for mankind generally. Many, many problems have arisen in this area. Many have faltered. Many significant problems have surfaced. The area of problems in relating with the opposite sex and complicating situations have arisen. Men having done many things that incur the wrath of God through sinful living in this area. But it's also an area that causes many problems for Christians. And it is also a very relevant and likely issue for us in our context. Helpful for us to ponder and to seek to learn from Solomon's failure. And this is an area, if we are not careful, we can go very far astray. The consequences, the implications of errors in this area can be very far-reaching. Not just for us in our personal lives, but also its implications and effects on church life generally. And this can happen even though we may have a favorable framework in which we can work out our lives, favorable especially in spiritual environment in which we can work out our lives. We cannot afford to be careless in this area. And that is this area of relationship with the opposite sex, area of passions and fleshly desires and inclinations, the area of marriage and related issues. We also need to take note that this is an area that the powers of darkness are actively at work to create problems, because it is easy for the powers of darkness to cause much pain, complications, and damage by attacking the lives of believers in this area, because we are all vulnerable. As fallen beings, we are vulnerable in this area. And many believers have gone far astray because of failures in this area. So just mention some problem areas to pay attention to. I will not elaborate on all three these three areas, but the three areas that we can take note of to pay attention to. The first problem area is the area of the need, or perhaps you can term it as lack of vigilance in relating to the opposite sex. Sometimes because we are not so conscious of the dangers in these areas and what is appropriate and what is not proper. So this is an area that we need to be careful about. Lack of vigilance in relating to the opposite sex, especially in the manner of relating, how we relate to them. Be conscious of the fact that the way we relate to the opposite sex cannot be the same as the way we relate to others of the same sex. And if we are not careful, then it can lead to inappropriate emotions. Emotions that are not appropriate may emerge. And this can happen even amongst the brethren. If we are not careful, we can also move in the direction of improper conduct, even though at first all this may be not in our minds. But as we are careless in the way we relate, then emotions creep up and creep in, and if we are not careful, the conduct can become more and more improper, and it can become rather serious and a dangerous thing. It can lead to serious errors with significant long-term implications. It can also result in actions, conduct, sin that can be rather damaging for our lives and the lives of others. So this is an area that we need to be careful, alert about, prayerful. We need to be wise. Let us not take for granted or overconfident that this will never happen to us, will never happen to me, I will never have any problem in this area. Never be presumptuous. Be careful. That doesn't mean that we have become so inhibited, so fearful, that we dare not relate. But be prayerful. And also to be aware that sometimes what is not meaningful and not proper may not be immediately obvious. And if you are not prayerful and careful, it may begin subtly. Not straight away something seriously improper, seriously wrong, but because we are not alert to it, it may begin subtly and it can continue to develop subtly. So it may appear alright at the beginning, although if we are careful and alert, we would have realized that it is not meaningful. And as time passes by, it develops. And because it begins subtly, it develops subtly, we may not be quite conscious of what is happening, that things are not right. And even when it becomes quite really improper, because it develops slowly, we may not be so conscious of it. Or we may later try to justify it, rationalize it. Or at times, we can already become emotionally involved in a way which makes it difficult for us to be objective and clear. The second problem area is in the area of marriage, or getting married to a marriage partner that's contrary to God's intention for our lives. Marriage, getting married to a marriage partner is contrary to God's intention for our lives. And this is an important issue and a serious matter. And we know that there's always God's perfect will for our lives in every area, and especially major areas like marriage partner. Even the very issue as to whether we should be married, and if so, which marriage partner. That's the perfect will of God for our lives in this area. And when I say marriage or married partner, contrary to God's intention for our lives, you ponder about it, you realize that there are varying degrees of seriousness. And the varying degrees of seriousness of failure in this area is related to the degree of departure from God's intention. There is the Lord's perfect will for our lives in relation to a particular marriage partner. If we fail in this area and we get married to someone else, it may not be so serious if the person we're married to is still reasonably suitable. But it will become increasingly serious the further away we have departed from God's will and intention for our lives in relation to the issue of suitability. And suitability here, we are talking about not suitability in relation to our own thinking, our own desires, and whether we feel comfortable about it, we feel happy, contented, in inverted commas, or how the world looks at it. The two seem to be able to go and get along, they seem to be able to continue in their lives happily. But suitability in relation to a Christian perspective, the Lord's will for our lives and how it's going to affect our lives inwardly, the issues that matter, our walk with God, our working of our lives before God, degree of faithfulness, effectiveness in our walk with God. That is the primary issue. So serious departure from God's will in this area can lead to very significant hindrances to our personal walk with God, our service unto God, and the general outworking of our faith, because marriage relationship and marriage partners have significant influence over one another in many, many aspects of their lives. And so this is one area that we must take heed to learn from Solomon's failure. He failed very seriously in this area, and the implications, the consequences are very far-reaching, and we must take heed and learn. I'll elaborate on this point afterwards. The third problem area that we need to pay attention to is in relation to the issue of marriage itself, and this pertains to how husbands and wives influence and affect each other. How husbands and wives influence and affect each other, whether positively or negatively. You notice I mentioned three problem areas. The first is general relating. The second is already an issue of marriage. And third is the area of after you're married. So how husbands and wives influence and affect each other is a significant issue once married. And we can affect, the marriage partners can affect each other positively or negatively. And again here, when you talk about affecting positively or negatively, we're not talking about whether you make each other happy or not, but what kind of impact on each other's lives in relation to God's call. A, 3A we consider from the angle of our responsibility towards our marriage partner, means on our side, how we influence, the influence we exercise. The influence we exercise and how we affect our marriage partner. We have a responsibility once married. What kind of influence are we exercising? What is coming forth from our lives here I'm not so much talking about the ultimate effect, because the ultimate effect and impact also has to do with at the receiving end, how the other person responds. But I'm talking about what you're projecting, what is coming forth from you. Is it really positive? Does it move in the direction of edification, encouragement? Are you contributing to his life? Are you helping him in his walk with God, in the outworking of his time? Is it a positive direction? Or are you a hindrance? Do you make it more difficult for the person to work out his life before God and his general development, qualities in his life? Are we an encouragement or are we a hindrance? Do we dilute the person's life? So the primary issue here that we need to concentrate upon has to do with our attitude and our direction of life and conduct. The direction of it, what flows out from our heart, and a settled commitment consistently worked out in that direction. I say the primary issue has to do with our attitude and direction of life, because it is not so much whether there are difficulties. That is not the primary issue. So we need not be discouraged if in the marriage relationship, as we seek to work out, we find that because marriage, we may find that our marriage partner now has certain difficulties or responsibilities, various issues cropped up. That is not the point. We need not be discouraged about that. But the primary issue has to do with our attitude and what is the direction that we are moving towards in our own minds, and how the direction that we are moving towards that will then have a bearing on our partner, our marriage partner. It's the direction, the attitude of heart, the direction of our conduct, not so much whether there are difficulties that arises. Because in a healthy marriage, there will also be difficulties. Just as in a healthy personal walk with God, there would also be difficulties. The measurement is not difficulties, but direction, attitude of heart. 3B, this area of how husbands and wives influence and affect each other, would be on the receiving end. 3A is more talking about how we affect the other. 3B is to do with also a consideration of ourselves on our part, how we are affected. And here I'm more concentrating on problem area. And you'll notice that throughout this message, my concentration is not on various of these issues from every angle, but more from the angle of what we need to take heed of, the problem issues from this angle. And that is 3D, whether we allow our marriage relationship, including our interactions with our marriage partner and its responsibilities and implications in our working, because there will be responsibilities and implications in our working of marriage, when we allow all this to dilute our faith and commitment to God. When we allow them to dilute our faith and commitment to God and our effectiveness of service. Whether we allow it to happen. Because even if there are difficulties, or even if our marriage partner have failed to conduct themselves in a way that they ought to do, they are failures, it does not mean that our faith, our commitment to God must diminish. Our earnestness for God must diminish. Our faith must drop. Do we allow our personal walk with God to suffer because of marriage relationship, responsibilities and implications? And this is one area we noticed that King Solomon failed very badly. How he allowed his wives to turn his heart away from God and to idolatry. And this is a very significant area of problem and a common problem not only an area of problem that can be very serious in specific instances, but also common. It's a common problem. Believers, after getting married, often face difficulties in this area, and if they're not careful, the way they work out their lives can suffer because of marriage and its responsibilities and implications. And it is because of this that Paul wrote the way he did in 1 Corinthians 7 verses 25 to 35. If you just, sometimes believers reading this passage in 1 Corinthians 7, you at times wonder why Paul puts it in this way. Isn't marriage something that is in line with the will of God? Surely marriage can also be a very meaningful experience, an enriching experience. And that is true. Paul is also not against the institution of marriage. He makes quite clear that we shouldn't forbid marriage. He even compares the marriage relationship with the relationship between Christ and the church in Ephesians chapter 5. But because of the kind of problems that can easily come in, and how our faith, our working of our lives, our commitment to God can become diluted, Paul spoke rather strongly in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, reading from verse 25. Paul says, "Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I think then that this is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life. And I'm trying to spare you." So verse 28, Paul says, it's not so much that you get married, it's sinful, but he says, are you released from a wife? Verse 27, do not seek a wife. And he says that if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. Trouble, then, actually the same word, where in other contexts can be translated as tribulation or afflictions. Various kinds of difficulties, afflictions, tribulations that come our way. As Paul says, I'm trying to spare you. He's talking about a tendency in marriage for many kinds of difficulties to emerge. But not only that, he went on, verse 29. But this I say, brethren, time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. And so on. And then verse 32, he says, I want you to be free from concern. Be free from concern, that is, without a lot of anxiety, worries. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. Now Paul is not saying here that this will definitely happen, but he puts in this form to indicate the strong tendency in that direction if we are not careful. That a person before his marriage who is concerned about the things of the Lord and his walk with God, service unto God, after his marriage is not careful, then it can happen this way quite easily. Becomes concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. Now the way Paul puts it here, he's talking about trying to please. Now there's nothing wrong in pleasing one another in itself. But if you become, if you're not careful, then pleasing one another becomes the primary thing rather than pleasing God first. And pleasing one another only in the context of pleasing God. But if you are not careful in marriage, it's easy that pleasing one another becomes at the forefront And Paul links this with concern about the things of the world. Now he is talking about the whole perspective, a worldly perspective of the temporal form, as he had earlier talked about in the earlier verses about how verse 31, those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it, but the form of this world is passing away. He's talking about how we should be quite careful not to become engrossed in the things of the world, in the temporal things, like the people of the world, and we lose our perspective, the thrust of our lives as believers ought to. And he's saying that once you're married, if you're not careful, you can become over preoccupied with how to please each other. Verse 33, he talks about pleasing the wife. Later on, he talks about the wife pleasing the husband. Both sides. And not just pleasing one another, but in this kind of context, about concern about the things of the world from a temporal perspective, you please one another, not from the eternal perspective. And so it says, verse 34, and his interests are divided. Your heart becomes divided. There's nothing wrong in trying to please your wife in itself. There's a place for it if you know how to do so, linked together with undivided devotion to God. The pleasing of the wife, the husband, is in the context of a heart wholly devoted to God, consecrated unto God. In that context, you can please each other, where it's in line with what is pleasing in the sight of God. But Paul is talking about pleasing one another in a manner that is not meaningful. The woman who is unmarried, verse 34, and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord. Of course, not all are like that. But he's talking about even when you are single, you're concerned about things. But if you're not careful, you may then, after marriage, become entangled and gross. You're trying to please your husband in a manner that is not meaningful. So he says, verse 34, the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. These are proper, healthy things. But when you become married, one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, the perspective, the preoccupation, the worldly perspective about temporal things, how she may please her husband in that kind of context. But of course, it doesn't mean that in marriage, as I mentioned, husband and wives should try their best not to please each other. That is not what Paul is talking about. But the way you go about it, where is your heart? How do you go about pleasing one another? The pleasing each other becomes primary. So verse 35, Paul goes on to talk about, at the very heart of it, what is he trying to aim towards? Why is he saying all these things? These are not trying to make things difficult for you, or don't get married, things like that. But I'm actually saying all these things for your own good. Verse 35, I say this for your benefit. It's to your advantage if you pay heed to what I have to tell you. Not to put a restraint upon you, not to make it difficult for you, but to promote what is seemly, what is proper, what is good, and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. That is Paul's primary concern. Undistracted devotion to the Lord. In other words, he's talking about marriage, the tendency to becoming distracted, and as a result, not able to be properly concentrating our hearts and minds on the meaning of devotion to God. Although I mentioned about the problem issues, the problem that tends to arise, and although Paul speaks rather strongly in this area about being distracted during marriage, on our working of marriage relationship, we of course realize that there's also a need to be understanding towards our marriage partner. And there are legitimate needs. Not only that, once we are married, there are also responsibilities and implications, and we should not be neglectful. But we must at the same time remember, and this is what Paul is primarily concerned about, that faithfulness to God must always remain primary. In a marriage relationship, faithfulness to God must remain primary, and the spirit of discipleship mustn't slacken. The earnestness must not be diminished. And if you're not careful in a marriage relationship, it can happen. But it does not have to happen. It doesn't mean you get married, your spirit of discipleship must diminish, your earnestness must slacken. No. And Paul is trying to tell us that this can happen easily. It's an area that we need to watch out for, to pay attention to if you're married. So the primary thing in marriage is not to make each other happy, but the primary thing, whether single or married, must be undistracted devotion to God, wholehearted devotion to God. That must be primary. And in the context of that wholehearted devotion to God, of undistracted devotion to God, there is a place to pay attention to how we relate to our marriage partners, how we fulfill the responsibilities that are proper in the marriage relationship, including caring for, giving due consideration to how we should treat and meet the legitimate needs of the marriage partner. But the outworking in these areas must remain and continue to be part of our expression of devotion to God. As part of our love for God, we work out our lives in every area, whether it be work situations, the way we relate to other people, and also the way we treat and relate to our marriage partners and marriage responsibilities, including where later it arises, the way we bring up the children. Part of our expression of our love for God, our devotion to God. And it mustn't in any way contradict, go against it. In other words, the way we work out our marriage responsibilities, the way we treat our marriage partner, children, and so on, must not be outside of our expression of devotion to God, or in competition to it, or at odds with it. And sometimes it happens, and we must be alert to it that it doesn't happen. And at times, marriage partners who are not so able to see these issues clearly, may at times feel this way. One marriage partner is trying to work out certain areas in his understanding of how to be faithful to God, and the other may feel the difficulty because not so much time, for example, may be available to spend together and things like that, and the sense of feeling that there's a competition of the person trying to serve God and hear the time spent with family. But we have to see very clearly that God in His perfect wisdom includes, and there is a place for family relationships, but it is part of God's total plan and must not be in competition with God's perfect will and at odds with our walk with God, our faithfulness to God. I now want to go on to concentrate on a brief consideration of an area that many of us would probably like to be clearer about, and that is the issue of approach. Our approach to the issue of marriage for those who are not yet married. Approach to the issue of marriage for those who are not yet married. I say a brief consideration because this subject, to treat it properly, you require at least a number of messages, which I do not intend to go into today, perhaps the Lord willing on another occasion. But today what I want to consider with you will be more from the present context of our consideration of King Solomon's life, what we can learn from what went wrong in his life, and that is considering more from the angle of concern not to go wrong in this area, taking heed from what happened to King Solomon and how to ensure that it doesn't happen to us. What are the issues to bear in mind rather than a treatment of the whole subject? And this is an area with important significance, implications for the individual and also for church life. a very relevant issue for us to ponder about and to pay heed to. And a preliminary remark. This issue of approach to marriage for those who don't get married. It is important in our approach, important, very important, that there be a sincere seeking to know and to submit to God's will. A sincere seeking to know and to submit to God's will and leading. Rather than to satisfy personal desires, rather than to satisfy personal desires and then to try to justify it. This is the basic preliminary point that is very important. There must be a sincere seeking to know and submit to God's perfect will and leading, rather than to satisfy our personal desires and then try to justify it. Now this point, as you ponder about it, is quite obvious. Once raised, generally, we will all agree to it, because this is part of the meaning of love for God. You say we love the Lord, we are committed to God, then we would want to, and we will acknowledge that we should seek to know the Lord's will and God's leading in this area of marriage, as it's a very important area. Just as we desire to submit to God's will in every area, how much more so this very important area. But though generally once raised you acknowledge it, agree to it, I emphasize it because if we are not careful, easily we may not abide by it, though we may agree to it when it's raised. If we are not careful, we can easily move in the direction of personal desires and then try to justify our actions. And I mentioned about a sincere seeking to know and submit to God's will, that this flows forth from our hearts. We genuinely want to know, not just saying that yes, this should be the case, but deep in our hearts we really want to know God's will and His leading, rather than just our personal inclinations and our own desires. And there are two helpful questions for us to check our basic approach on this area related to this preliminary remark that I've made. Two questions that can help us to check our basic approach. And these are questions relevant to all those of us who are not yet married as we consider this issue of marriage. Firstly, we should ask ourselves whether our personal inclinations and desires in relation to marriage and our marriage partner, whether this comes first to us or our faithfulness to God comes first. Our personal inclinations and desires in relation to marriage and marriage partner, in other words, even the very desire to get married, or rather to become married, our personal desires, inclinations, and our getting married, as well as the issue of a partner, choosing a partner, or coming to understand who is suitable for marriage partner. Is it personal inclination and desires first, or God and faithfulness to God comes first? Now we can verify this a little further by further asking this question. Whether do we move in the direction of a particular marriage partner and then ask God to bless us? Do we first move in that direction? According to our own desires, inclination, we move in that direction towards a particular marriage partner, and then we ask God to bless us, or do we first sincerely seek to know God's will in the matter, pray to God about the issue of marriage partner, and then there are sufficient indications in that direction, sufficient indication of God's will in the direction of a particular marriage partner before we move in that direction That is, before we move in that direction of going beyond the brother and sister relationship and moving in the direction of commitment to marriage. In other words, what ought to be an if our hearts are right and faithfulness to God comes first, then we do not simply start moving in the direction of any particular marriage partner. We don't start moving in the direction. But we can relate generally, meaningfully, in all purity of heart, brothers and sisters, in brother-sister relationship. And we do sincerely seek the Lord's will in the matter. And before we move in the direction of going beyond the brother-sister relationship, there are indications in the direction that God is leading us in that direction. And I'll elaborate later on what this means. There are sufficient indications to justify moving in that direction and link to understanding of God's leading in that direction. We don't just simply act according to our own thinking, our own desires, our own inclinations, and then ask God to bless us, to sanction it. Second question. Do we recognize that commitment to and faith in God includes preparedness and willingness to be single? Do we recognize that commitment to and faith in God includes? Do we recognize that commitment to and faith in God includes preparedness and willingness to be single? Sometimes we just think about getting married, and some of us are more inclined towards marriage, and we just assume that that is something natural for all people, and that we have every right to move in that direction. But do we realize, we recognize, and we ponder about it, we will have to acknowledge it is true. We have to be prepared and willing to be single if that is God's will for our lives, that this is possible. And if you are committed to God, we must be prepared for that. It's part of the meaning of commitment to God, faith in God. And not only that, not only willing, but be willing, not grudgingly, not reluctantly, but trusting God's perfect wisdom. The real posture to adopt, trusting God's perfect wisdom, that is joyful submission. And when I say joyful submission, it's not just something that we profess with our lips, but when we ponder about it, then you realize that if God's desire is for us to be single, then this is in accordance with His perfect wisdom. He knows what is best. Then we can joyfully submit to Him, just as we joyfully submit to God's will in every area of life. And we know we can and we should, because we come to recognize that He is our loving Heavenly Father who does not withhold anything good from us, and He knows all things we don't. He knows all issues perfectly. He is the God of perfect wisdom. But what about those who are inclined towards marriage? What if you are inclined towards marriage? Let's see. We need not feel uncomfortable about this. There's nothing wrong in feeling inclined towards marriage. Nothing to feel uncomfortable about. But to realize that there is a place for inclination and preference for marriage. Nothing wrong with it. But even when we have an inclination, a preference for marriage, we still need to be open to the possibility that though we may be inclined towards that direction, it still may not be God's will for us to be married. There are many reasons why this may be so. Perhaps no suitable partner for us, perhaps because of our own selves, there are certain issues within us, perhaps related to the Lord's desire for our lives, His call for us, what He wants us, how He wants us to work out our lives. Marriage may not be the most suitable thing for us. there are many, many reasons, factors that are in operation, whatever it is. Even though we may not be able to understand all the reasons, we know that God knows all things. He knows best. And we must be open to that possibility. We mustn't assume that because we're inclined towards marriage, we'll simply get married. And assume that we must get married because we're inclined in that direction. And in regards to the issue of being married or being single, it's helpful to ponder about it and to take note of the fact that when we are thinking about marriage and our desire to get married, especially when inclined towards marriage, then helpful for us that we do not just simply be aware of and just think about the advantages of marriage and the areas we are inclined towards in married life, and also all the difficulties of remaining single. I need not elaborate. Those of us who are more inclined towards marriage will tend to be very conscious of all these areas. Because neither for us to be overconfident that we are very equipped for being single, because we are not fully aware of the difficulties that can arise. And after a period of time, we may face some of the difficulties in later life that we may not be so conscious of now. But it's helpful, there's a place for us to ponder over these things, so that we are more ready to face whatever the future may hold. And most of all, trusting God that by His grace, He will see us through whatever is in line with His perfect will. But our attitudes must be right. But here I'm not just talking about people who may at times think how wonderful it is to get married and think about all the advantages and all of being married and the areas they're inclined towards and all the difficulties of remaining single. And as a result of such an approach, they may find themselves moving very strongly in the direction of marriage, moving very urgently in that direction. It's helpful to ponder over the matter so that we are more balanced in our perspective and our understanding of these areas. That is, also to realize that there are many adjustments, responsibilities and implications in marriage. And there can be various problems that easily arise in outworking of marriage, which can be rather difficult, complicated, painful. We must realize that this can easily come about. And a person who gets married and then faces various difficulties, at times very intense, may during such times of grief or serious, intense difficulties, then long for release from these difficulties and long for the freedom in inverted commas, the freedom of the lives and actions of one who is single and looking around at all those who are still single, envying them how fortunate they are. And not only that, a desire, a hope, a wish that we may be able to get out of it. But we have to realize that once we get in, we cannot get out. There is no place for regret in this area. Someone, in a humorous way, compares the institution of marriage to a war. Some of you may have heard this from me before. Those who are single on one side of the wall, and those who are married are on the other side. And many on the single side are eagerly trying to jump over to the other side, while many of those who have already jumped over are eager trying to jump back. Now this expression is by an unbeliever talking about the affairs in the world. But we realize that for Christians, jumping back is not an option open for Christians. Because once married, you just have to work at it, however difficult. And you must face this issue properly before you get married, not after. In fact, once married, you should not even entertain the idea of jumping back. So look before you leap, or ponder carefully before you jump across. All the thinking, all the praying, all the considering about the desirability or otherwise of getting married must be done before we take that step, and not after. After you got married, it is not helpful to ponder about the desirability of getting married otherwise for ourselves. We just look at it. But before that, all the thinking, all the praying, all the considering, sufficient, is gone into before getting married. Because we have to remember that marriage comes in a package, a big package, and there are many items in it. It is true that there are various meaningful and positive aspects in married life. For example, the potential of very deep fellowship, sharing, praying, and working out together, and many other aspects that we can ponder about. But also, at the same time, there is need for the various adjustments, the difficulties that may arise, especially because of differences in background, upbringing, past experiences, differences in personality traits, moods that may arise, and male and female are different, various preferences, disinclinations, way of doing things. Many things that can arise can be very trying, especially because the two are so involved in one another's lives, so many interactions, and you know that there are many people who can be friendly, who can get along quite well, good friends when they're staying apart. Even we're not talking about marriage, but even just friends. But when they come together and stay together, they may find it rather difficult. How much more so in a marriage relationship where the interactions goes beyond just staying together, but very close proximity, very involved in each other's lives, and can be compounded by the various weaknesses and deficiencies in the lives of the marriage partners. And we have to face up to the fact, not just looking at our marriage partner and looking at all their faults, or thinking that if I find one who has few weaknesses, it may be alright, but it actually involves both. Also, our own weaknesses will also compound the situation. And then, in-laws, we know, are also part of the package. We cannot say that we do not want to have them. It's part of it. Likewise, readiness for children, responsibility, the upbringing, where the Lord should grant that we have children. We cannot neglect all these things. They are part of it. So we cannot pick and choose those aspects that we like and only think about those things and move urgently in the direction of marriage. We know that we have to take the whole package or leave it alone. So in particular, for a person who wants to be serious in his walk or her walk with God, that is, you want to maintain a deep spirit of this, you want to maintain a deep sense of commitment to God, you want to be a true disciple of the Lord, then you need also to bear in mind, and I assume that this is true for each one of us, even if at the moment we realize that there are various weaknesses in our lives, at least we want to move in that direction. We want to be serious in our walk with God. Then we must bear in mind a very significant factor. And that is the factor of relative intensity of spiritual opposition and pressure. I say relative intensity of spiritual opposition and pressure, relative because to the degree you want to be serious with God, to that degree, there will be the intensity of spiritual opposition and pressure on our lives generally, but even more, but especially in this area of marriage, we must bear in mind that the evil one concentrates much of his attack on this area once we are married. Because of the importance of the issue of marriage and its bearing on our lives, and also because the marriage relationship is very vulnerable, he can easily manipulate, attack us in this area and create many deep, serious problems to hinder our walk with God and the effectiveness of the outworking of our lives, and as such to nullify the lives of God's people. And, sad to say, the evil one has often succeeded in causing not only many problems in the sense of difficulties, but also causing much damage to the marriage partners, as well as the Lord's work suffering as a result of God's people failing in this area. It is easy for the evil one to magnify various of the difficulties in the outworking of marriage, relationship, communication difficulties, personality clashes, misunderstandings. There are many of these things that can easily arise. That doesn't mean that it cannot be overcome, that the marriage relationship cannot work out very meaningfully. But I'm saying that these are issues that we need to be aware of, and this has a bearing in our whole consideration of praying over the issue of a marriage partner. All these are areas that we have to bear in mind, because many of these difficulties, when they arise, the clashes, the misunderstandings, and even quarrels, can lead to many very painful and discouraging situations. And worse, it can lead to compromise on our part, the diminishing earnestness and intensity in our lives. And this dilution of our lives, our commitment to God, our outworking, can sometimes be motivated by the desire for peace and calm. Because when you want to be earnest, when you work out faithfully, you find many difficulties arising, and so you compromise. Or, in various other ways that Paul, for example, what Paul says, being preoccupied with each other's desires to make each other happy. Sometimes because of many difficulties, you want peace, you want calm. And so you compromise. Compromise in the sense of your recognition of what God desires you to do, but you still refrain from doing it because of fear of the difficulties that may arise. Compromise doesn't arise merely because you take into consideration that you are now married, and you have to bear in mind that you do have responsibilities towards your marriage partner and outworking in marriage, family relationship. So in this area, it's helpful for us to take note of the point that relative pleasantness and calm in a marriage relationship does not mean that that marriage relationship is working out better. Relative pleasantness and calm doesn't mean that it is better. It may actually be due to little quality in the marriage relationship. Because there's very little quality in it. And we compromise. So we have relative pleasantness and calm, and also the reduction of spiritual opposition and pressures. So it may be due to little quality in the marriage relationship, and it's outworking, and due to compromises. And to realize that to be healthy, earnest, and zealous for God. I say healthy, earnest, because I'm not talking about just being earnest and zealous without wisdom. But even with wisdom, looking to God, trusting God, to be healthy, earnest, and zealous for God is not easy for the marriage relationship. It's not easy. It will not be easy. Even in our personal lives, we already realize to be earnest for God already isn't easy. And in marriage relationship, there's now also the relationship that will come under pressures. Likely, if you want to be earnest for God in a healthy way, likely you will undergo pressures and strain. And it is not easy to go through the pressures well. So how well a couple is faring is not measured by how easy and pleasant, or conversely, how difficult and painful they are working. In other words, if it's painful and difficult, it doesn't mean that it is not good or to that degree, it is things are the relationship is not working out well. You don't measure in that way, but rather the measurement is always by the yardstick of degree of faithfulness to God. To what degree the marriage partners individually and together they are faithful to God, and the effectiveness they are working their lives in their personal growth and development and their service unto God. And if we are faithful to God, in the context of faithfulness to God, the difficulties and pain that may arise in the context of the outworking of marriage relationship can be helpful for us, because in such a context we can learn much and we can learn deeply. But I mentioned in the context of faithfulness to God. So sometimes you realize to be faithful to God in various areas, difficulties are going to arise, painful situations are going to arise. But if we do so in faithfulness to God, then we can trust God to undertake and realize that there's much to learn, and not only much to learn, but to learn deeply in the context of the difficulties. There are two important related aspects to bear in mind. Two important related aspects to bear in mind when considering movement in the direction of marriage. So we are still talking about those who are not yet married, considering the issue of marriage, and we are thinking of movement in the direction of marriage. There are two important related aspects to bear in mind. The first aspect is the approach taken. This is important. The approach taken. The second aspect has to do with marrying a suitable marriage partner. So the first aspect is the approach taken. Both are important. Not only a suitable marriage partner, but also the approach that we take. The approach we take in itself, we must make sure at the end of it, we end up with a suitable partner. We also take care with that. So these two aspects are related, because the approach taken will help in a suitable partner. If we want to ensure we have a suitable partner, we have to take care of the approach taken. And both must be pleasing in the eyes of the Lord. Approach taken, A. Some of this I will just go through very briefly and quickly, and not a detailed consideration, but just bring to our awareness that these are things that we need to bear in mind as we consider movement in the direction of marriage. A. Prayerful, proper, careful consideration on our part. The approach that we take, we must be prayerful. There must be careful consideration on our part, and also due consideration for the other, to enable the other person to make a wise decision. We must bear in mind both of these aspects. On our part, we cannot rush, we cannot be careless. There must be proper approach, healthy, prayerful, careful consideration before the Lord. But the other is also, we must bear in mind how we conduct ourselves when we want to move in the direction of marriage. Is there due consideration, careful way of approach that we give due consideration to the other person to enable the other person to make a wise decision? In other words, for example, we mustn't proceed in such a way that we make it difficult for the other person to consider the matter properly. For example, we move very fast, we take steps, we move too fast, or we keep up the pace, we keep up the pressure, like the worldly approach to people of the world. They want to attain their goal, they want to make sure they get that person. They will take various steps to make sure that they attain that goal. We must be very careful. We never get infected with this kind of approach and attitude and thinking, that we will by all ways and means or take various steps to just to try to make sure we attain our goal, and as a result we do not give due consideration for the other person to be able to come to a wise decision. We hinder the other person from considering the method properly, we make it more difficult for the other person. Now this is especially true and important for brothers to bear in mind. How the brothers conduct themselves in this area. Not to conduct themselves in such a way that make it difficult for the sisters. Take various steps too quickly, and the sisters find it difficult then to consider the matter properly. Things move too fast, and very quickly, a sense of attachment comes about. But although I say this is especially true of brothers, this point is also relevant for sisters to bear in mind. Because in this area, if you ponder about it, sisters are not just passive. And it's also easy for sisters to conduct themselves in such a way that they quicken the pace or make it such that the relationship proceeds very fast. Conduct themselves in such a way that makes it difficult for the brothers to keep their cool, to be able to see the things objectively, consider it carefully. And sometimes it can be due to undue sense of urgency to get married or to make sure we get the particular prayer partner. I say this work either ways, brother or sister, and then we conduct ourselves in such a way that we hasten the pace unnecessarily, unduly. We need to take care in this area because the implications are lifelong. And ultimately, in a preliminary remark, as I mentioned, if our heart's desire is a desire to know God's will and God's leading, submission to God's perfect will, then we shouldn't be rushing in this way, but trusting God that what He desires for us, He will make clear, He will guide. And our approach must be in line with what is pleasing in the sight of God. And God definitely doesn't want us to conduct ourselves in such a way that we make it difficult for either to be able to recognize the will of God clearly. This is related to the second aspect, B, 1B, that we should take care that our conduct does not promote emotion. That the conduct doesn't promote emotion or in any other way blur objective understanding and as a result hinder clarity of knowing God's will. Promoting emotion or in any way blurring objective understanding of the issues and hindering clarity of knowing God's will. Hindering clarity of knowing God's will, it can hinder both the brother as well as the sister's understanding. So this is an area that we need to take care, because once we begin to relate, it's very easy for emotions to quickly surface and to deepen. So unless we are especially careful about it, then easily the emotions will develop very quickly. And once the emotions develop, it becomes difficult to be objective. It becomes difficult to know the Lord's leading. You pray and you keep on thinking in certain directions because your emotions are in that direction. And you can then mistake the Lord's will by the emotions, the thoughts that tend to come. And becomes difficult for you to know God's will. And in this regard, we have to pay attention to the manner of relating and also the content of communication. How you relate, one of the things you talk about, the content of your communication, how you go about relating with each other, will affect the issue of emotion. I will not elaborate, but just highlight this point for attention, because once you pay more attention to it, there are various aspects that you will know how to be careful, which in any case, best I do not have a place to elaborate in this context now. The second important aspect is the importance to ensure to the best that we can that we marry a suitable marriage partner in line with God's will for our lives. And to move in this direction, to ensure that the marriage partner is suitable, we must be careful that it is not based on superficial considerations. or just feelings, how we feel towards a particular person, and just based on inclinations. Some superficial considerations include certain things that the person may or may be able to do for us, or the way the person does certain things, conduct himself or herself. Certain outward manifestations quickly draw us, attract us, incline us in that direction. We have to be careful. We shouldn't be primarily motivated by outward conduct and outward appearance. But we must ponder about, pray over, consider from the angle of the issues that really matter from a Christian perspective. From what we've come to understand of what are the areas and issues that are important to God. See, here you are trying to consider the Lord's will. And very often in knowing God's will, it doesn't merely come about by God suddenly telling us this is it, although that can happen. But very often, not only often, but a meaningful way that God guides us, He desires our participation in it, our own consideration before Him. So, because that's also part of our growing up, our maturing process, that we are part in it. And so we need to learn to consider these things from a biblical perspective. And as we seek to kind of understand what's important in God's sight, then more and more we'll be able to move in a direction to recognize, to discern God's will and leading in the matter. So in this regard, an important safeguard against making serious error is the careful, prayerful consideration of objective grounds. This point has been emphasized. Objective grounds on issues that are important and relating to compatibility and suitability. Of course, our concern for the spiritual health of the marriage partner is important, but beyond that, not just anybody who is healthy spiritually need necessarily be suitable for us or compatible, will make a compatible marriage partner. And it may not be easy for us to be clear straight away. It may not be easy to be clear, but we must bear in mind, do we have objective grounds? Not just simply look for objective grounds to justify our prior personal inclination. We incline first and then seek for grounds. It shouldn't work that way. Then we are deceiving ourselves. So it may not be easy to be clear. So we need to take time to know and to understand the person accurately. And this is a major aspect. Understanding the person, to know the person accurately. Not just certain vague impressions or thinking, coming to conclusions about the person according to what you may say, fanciful thinking, wishful thinking, or fantasizing, not based on facts, or like those who are half in a dream. But important to know the person accurately. And especially when you talk about knowing the person accurately, especially the person's true character. This is a very critical area. The person's true character is inward attitudes, not just the outward expressions, but deep within, what are his real attitudes towards life? His inward qualities, his real attitude towards God and truth. His love for God and truth. And other relevant areas, like his personality traits, areas of weaknesses and deficiencies. When we are attracted towards someone in this area of marriage, movement, direction of marriage, it's easy for us to gloss over, to be blind to deficiencies and weaknesses. But we need to ponder about these areas. Are there these areas? What do they mean? Carefully consider these things and not just simply ignore them and then move in the direction of marriage, and after that then feel very disturbed, shocked when we are faced with these difficulties, deficiencies and weaknesses that stare us in the face in the outworking of marriage. And all this, remember, as I mentioned earlier, to bear in mind how all this can become magnified in the context of pressures and difficulties, including spiritual pressures, as well as many of the difficulties that marriage outworking may involve or would involve. So in this regard, we must take care not to be taken in by appearance rather than reality. And so the subject we've been considering, appearance and reality, is a very relevant issue when we are moving in the direction of marriage. Do not be taken in by appearance. Make sure you know how to prayerfully look to God to try to recognize the reality, especially of the issues that really matter. So do not too quickly commit yourself or move in a direction that goes beyond brother-sister relationship, because you may say, I'm not committing myself, but you conduct yourself in such a way that you can make the other person believe that you are, or draw the other into a relationship that is not appropriate because you have not properly considered the matter, and as a result, various problems and hurt feelings can arise. So we need to bear in mind that there are serious lifelong implications because the marriage, we cannot afford to be careless. We cannot take a gamble. We cannot say, it seems like it, I'm not very sure, but never mind, I will just try it out. We must not move in the direction of marriage in a state of uncertainty and ambiguity. When you're still uncertainty, I'm not sure whether it's suitable or not, it's ambiguous, and then you want to move in that direction, you mustn't do that. But you see, what happens if I'm uncertain? Then wait. Don't move in that direction of marriage. But you see, I've already waited. Okay, you waited. Are you now clear? If you waited and you're still not clear, you continue to wait. It doesn't mean I've waited, so now it's time to conclude. You may come to a conclusion it's not suitable, but if you haven't become clear that it's suitable, bearing in mind all these things that we're talking about, then you mustn't say, I've already waited, so, or I give myself 6 months, or I give myself 1 year, or at the most 2 years. You cannot give yourself arbitrary guidelines of that form, because, as you emphasize, marriage is a very major area of our lives. We cannot afford to make mistakes. Once committed, we cannot withdraw. So in this regard, we should also be appreciative and thankful wherever counsel is available, and so to avail ourselves of counsel from those who can help us. And I say from those who can help us, again, we're talking about from a spiritual perspective, those whom we recognize are able to help us to understand the Lord's will, and also those who can help us in these two important aspects that we've been considering. The issue of consideration of a suitable partner, the issue of approach. Those who can discuss with us, consider this matter. We should avail ourselves of counsel, especially in areas like this. It's easy for us to be subjective, and also sometimes emotions arises, various thoughts come to our minds, and we miss various important issues to think about, to bear in mind. And so counsel is very helpful, and we should avail ourselves of what God provides for us in this area. But I want to emphasize that it's important for us to seek counsel early. And I'll explain why it's very important. We must seek counsel early, not at a late stage, because otherwise we may enter into involvements and entanglements that become very difficult to sort out by the time we seek for counsel. We already involved, entangled, very difficult by that time to sort out things, and then we seek counsel. And these difficulties and problems that arises if we do not seek counsel early can include four aspects. A, by that time, if it's late, already damage and hurt may already have taken place. For example, our approach is not right, and already damage and hurt, sometimes to the other partner, to the other person, sometimes to ourselves. B, by that time there can be emotion or the sense of attachment can become rather strong, And it becomes difficult for us to come out of the relationship, even though we then realize it's not suitable, not meaningful to carry on. But by that time, it's difficult to come out. And this is a common problem. You're not careful, you already move in the direction, already attached. Emotions are strong. We come to realize it's not wise to carry on, but difficult to come out. It's a complicated thing. Those of us who are not in that kind, have never been through a situation like this, may not realize how difficult it can become. Take care. Do not get yourself into that kind of a situation. See, the emotions and the attachment can come about in such a way that it can also render it very difficult for the person then to be objective, to be open, and also to be able to properly receive and understand God's will. He has already moved so much in that direction. The emotions are strong, the sense of attachment is there. Then it's very difficult for the person to be objective. He may seek counsel, but difficult to talk, discuss properly. The person may not be very open already. Even though he may say, I want to be open, he may really try, but it's difficult because of that relationship already has gone to that stage. It may then become difficult, even if he says, try to help me understand God's will, but it becomes difficult because the emotions are strong, the relationship is gone, the involvement is gone in that direction. D, a person being involved may be able to realize that it's not suitable and also able to come out. But even if the person is able to do so, he may do so after a lot of difficult, painful, hurting experiences in the process. The whole thing can be quite messy. And also after coming out, there can sometimes be long-term scars that remain for the person and for the other. Damage can already be done. So this is an area that we cannot afford to be careless about. Also helpful for us, important for us to bear in mind in seeking counsel, related to the preliminary remark, that this seeking of counsel must be accompanied by a genuine desire to know the truth and to be helped in understanding what is a healthy approach and what is God's will. You come for counsel because you want to move in the direction, not because you feel obliged to, or because you can then tell others that I've already sought counsel and so okay, it's alright. And try to convince the one you are seeking counsel in a certain direction of thinking or presenting things in a certain way, so that the person whom you seek counsel from will then agree with the direction that you desire. All these are very serious. We must come with a genuine desire to know the truth, to be helped in understanding what is a healthy approach, what is God's will, not just to get assent, agreement, or to get encouragement to move in the direction that we are inclined towards, in the direction of our personal desires. And also, if we are of that approach attitude, we may then choose the person we seek counsel from accordingly. In other words, those whom we think will agree with us, will encourage us, then we seek them out. Those whom we think are not likely to agree with us, we will not approach them. We refrain from seeking counsel from those whom we think will not be, in inverted commas, supportive of our line of action, thinking, direction. Or to be unhappy, or even react, unhappy in a negative sense, unhappy, react when, as we seek counsel, it does not turn out the way we desire. All this will not be in line with the true spirit of genuine desire to know God's will and the truth. But when we seek counsel and so on, our consideration is, will we be able to be helped to have an objective understanding, helped in the line of truth? And sometimes, not only unhappy, react with the result that we are not able to move in the direction of our desire, we can get rather upset. But not only that, we sometimes even get upset with the person who does not encourage us in that direction that we desire. Merely because our inclinations and desires are not satisfied. So in conclusion, just want to mention that marriage can be a very meaningful and enriching experience and a positive step in our lives. Though this is not the area I emphasize today, marriage definitely can be a very meaningful and enriching experience and a positive step in our lives. Having considered all the various problems and difficulties, let us not think that marriage is second best. It's an accommodating of our weaknesses, then we move in that direction. No, it can be a positive step. It can be very meaningful and enriching experience in marriage relationship, family life. Not only much to learn, but mutual encouragement and direction of God's call. But to realize that it can also be very difficult, painful, complicated. The difficult and painful can arise even when it is a healthy relationship, positive, generally positive marriage relationship. But the more serious is that the marriage relationship can not only be difficult and painful, complicated, but also damaging. And its damaging implications, consequences can be very far-reaching. It can be turned out that way. And many of God's children have been negatively affected, seriously hindered in their lives because of significant failures in this area. So we must proceed carefully, prayerfully, and genuinely seek the Lord's perfect will. And to realize that seeking the Lord's perfect will in this area is related to our overall walk with God, an expression of our commitment and devotion to God. Not just seeking God's will so He can make life easy for us, wanting to bless this area of our lives, but because it's part of our commitment to God. Commitment to God includes obedience to Him, submission to His perfect will. So let us take heed and learn from Solomon's serious errors and failure in this area, and try our best to ensure that we do not make a major error in this important area of life. And emphasize a major error, because it can happen, and a major error can have very disastrous consequences. But we need not be fearful. If our attitudes are right, we are prayerful in our approach, then if we bear in mind what we've considered today, we can properly pray over and consider the issue of marriage. And as the Lord leads in that direction, to move in it, looking to Him for grace, that all may turn out meaningfully. So let us then briefly reflect on what we have considered today. Today, our major area of consideration has to do with marriage and related issues, as we consider, reflect upon Solomon's failure in this area,